Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of What Most People Think. How are you? I don't know about you. I don't know if it's February. I'm feeling a little bit better at the moment. I know the last couple of weeks have been a bit downbeat, but it's February. I mean, it's still cold. We're still in total lockdown, but somehow it seems better. And I guess that's because a lot of people have had their first jabs, or at least been offered their first jab. So thank God for the old people, eh? You know, they'll get vaccinated. They'll all be going summer holidays this year. They'll be going Malaga. And we'll be going Pontins. But, you know, good for them. Good for them. As long as, alongside getting their council houses for £7, I think it's high time that something nice happened for those people. But yeah, this is our thing now. As Brits, this is what we do. We vaccinate. It's just a skill we have, like burying our feelings and pretending not to be annoyed by stuff and saying sorry when we really mean fuck off and die. I hate you forever. So this is What Most People Think. This is the podcast that's been willing to be honest about, you know, some of the more negative human emotions. I know a lot of comedy seems to be engaged in the act of portraying yourself as a good person. I'm not necessarily a good person. I am a conservative voter. And by that, you know, I'd say that I'm socially liberal. I just don't like paying much tax. That's the bottom line. But I can admit that. I voted Leave. And on that note, we will be going back over this week and having a good look at the EU vaccine clusterfuck, because last week it was all just happening as I was recording the podcast and it got so much worse. And I'd love to unpack that, not in the spirit of don't they look like arseholes on the world stage. I'm doing this in the interests of objective journalism. And we're going to talk about a quick chat about Sadiq doing another bit of virtue signalling. And there'll also be a chat about men's mental health, more specifically the fact that as you hit middle age, your body goes to shit. And everyone thinks it's funny, isn't it? It's all funny when the men, when women's hair starts falling out, you just don't mention it, do you? It all goes a bit quiet. Like, you know, Wendy's wearing a bandana. It's either falling out or she's not well. Whereas with men, ah, look at you, baldy twat. So we're going to talk about that. Patreons, this show is funded. Well, it's kept weekly and ad-free by our glorious Patreons. First up, as I'm recording this, it's the 2nd of February. So sometimes they bump people out. If you are a Patreon and you want to be part of what's going on there, do check your account because sometimes it bumps people out. And this Thursday, we're doing an online gig with me, Leo Kirst and Francis Foster, and you don't want to be missing out on that. And of course, if you haven't joined the Patreon, it's a good time to join and be part of that on Thursday evening at 8:30. Let's look at the new Patreons, the new VIP Patreons this week. Chris McManus and Lewis Craig. McManus and Craig. That is definitely an ITV1 crime show, isn't it? McManus and Craig, solving crimes in the Highlands. And Mike Ward has rejoined, because he's one of these people, like I'm saying, that for whatever reason, Patreon bump you out. It's because, hey, you know, who wants to make money, right? Let's just bump people out for no reason. Let's find out if they really fucking want it. Now, the cuss count for this week. So, as ever, our stats are provided by David Domain, Swear Services Limited. He could just provide just swear data for the world. I think there'd been a lot of swearing in the offices at the EU. Meld! We look like absolute melds. The swears for last week's episode with Nico Yearwood was 29 fucking, 3 wankies, 2 shits, 1 pisshead, a clusterfuck, 1 pricks, 1 arsehole, and a bullshit, which is 0.65 swears per minute. Nico, very polite young man, only had 1 pisses. He just said pisses. A strange swear word that is. And then in terms of other references, we had 2 carry-on innuendos, One cricket reference and nothing from Star Wars last week, so that's quite thin on the ground. One thing David Domain has also done, and I'll upload this for the patrons to look at, is a cuss count leaderboard. Because you guys, when we last discussed this, it was like a Top Gear leaderboard for who swore the most. And Ramesh Ranganathan, hats off. Two appearances, 53 swears, which is, I think, what is that, 26 and a half an episode. That's ahead of Andrew Doyle. I mean, Andrew Doyle had two appearances and on 21. I mean, so he's a long way out there. Tom Walker, a.k.a. Jonathan Pye, is up there with 13 swears. Mark Nelson, also on 30 swears. David Baddiel on 20 swears. So it's quite a clear leaderboard there. But what's really interesting, you should check this out on the Patreon, is who didn't swear much. Catherine Ryan, no swears. No swears at all. Ian Stone, no swears. Leo Kearse, the wild man, the right-wing Scottish Conservative, clocking in with two swears in two appearances. One swear. Is he even really Scottish? I think he's really let down his culture there. Okay, just before we get on with the show, we always do a thank you and a fuck you. I want to do a thank you to the quality of modern mattresses. I don't know what happened or when someone decided that we needed to sit down and have better mattresses, but fuck, they've just gone off the scale, haven't they? And I know that for a while, probably posh people listening are going, well, I had them for a while. But now chumps like me can have them. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that they're cheap, but once you've had one, fucking hell. It made me think about the kind of mattresses that our parents used to sleep on. And my God, no wonder there were so many divorces, right? When you stop and think about it, they were lying on those, you know, those weird kind of wooden box bed things that were pushed together and held together by a little metal hook. That those nasty spring up your ass mattresses, they were really small as well. I don't really understand why beds were that small back in the day, even if the mattresses weren't as good. They were laying on something that was only partially bigger than the dog's bed. No wonder they all fucking hated each other in that generation. It's like they were chained to a radiator in some sort of hostage situation, you know. But now we've got these mattresses, they've got memory foam. Oh, I don't like things like that try and claim that the thing itself has like human qualities. I don't think it's got memory foam. You know, I think your shape stays. I mean, if it's got memory foam, how detailed is that memory? Like, have they got PTSD from when they're in the lorry coming to your house? Like, for the first 2 weeks that they're in your house, they're like some scared puppy that isn't really adjusting it there. So the mattress keeps pissing itself in the corner. It remembers the shape of your body. Does it? Or is it just, you leave an indentation on it. It doesn't remember the shape of your body like some sort of fucking ex-lover that still recalls your delicate silhouette. And a fuck you to Piers Morgan. I see him this morning. He was speaking to a bloke from the Isle of Man who've completely come out of all lockdown restrictions. And he basically was trying to get the guy to say, isn't Britain shit? And he's going, well, you must be thinking, How shit is Britain? And the guy was going, no, actually, I think it's a very different story. We only have 85,000 people in the Isle of Man. Britain has incredibly different population density. I don't really think you could compare it. And you could see clearly Piers was going, oh, fuck, this is my viral clip this week. No. But, you know, when you think about it, Britain is shit, though, isn't it? I mean, you guys in the Isle of Man, and you started trying to big the geezer up. And basically, Piers should have gone, look, mate, okay, I didn't get you on here to have a rational conversation, yeah? This is GMB. You know what I need. I need a little viral clip. So why don't you stop pissing around, being reasonable, and just tell us that Britain is a shithole? Okay, let's get on with the rest of the podcast. And first up, we're going to have a detailed unpacking of the EU vaccine clusterfuck. So last week when I did the podcast, the vaccine EU row was only just blowing up. As we all know, the EU are a little bit late approving their vaccine, you know, in the same way that Labour were a bit late realising that Jeremy Corbyn was a fucking liability. You know, they were just a little bit behind the curve on that. And then they spent the best part of last week in a row with AstraZeneca, which you haven't heard of them. They are actually like a big pharma company. It sort of sounds like a five-door hatchback for the family, doesn't it? Like the new AstraZeneca with cup holders. But it turns out they ordered from AstraZeneca incorrectly, or they certainly didn't get the contract pinned down in the way that they'd hoped. So this is obviously not a good thing when you're running the best part of an entire continent. It's it's certainly, you know, it's a little bit of a blind spot, shall we say. You know, when I say blind spot, I mean, if you looked in your rearview mirror and there was no motorway and all you could see was your own shoulder. And so what they started talking about doing was despite having previously Ursula von der Leyen last summer said that, you know, the last thing we really want to see is vaccine nationalism. Suddenly the EU start throwing their weight around and they're talking about jumping the queue. Now, if there's one way to unite most of the country, Remainer or Leaver, in Britain, it's by not respecting the protocol of queuing. That is a big, you know, I don't know where you're watching or listening to this from, but that is a big cultural issue for us. I mean, the only way that you could unite the country in a similar way is if you started making tea in the fucking microwave or something. So the EU then spent a few days saber-rattling, but there were still people defending them, you know, and still people who didn't seem to want the comparative charts of how the UK was doing against the EU brought out. You know, they were saying, well, it's not a competition, isn't it? Well, then why the other week were you trotting out the fact that Britain was currently worst in the table of deaths per million? I mean, it's always, yeah, we were top. I mean, yeah, if you want to put a positive on it, we were top. It's just not necessarily a great league to be out ahead of. And they were so mature. Look, at the end of the day, we're just one planet. They started taking refuge in this kind of sort of flower power hippie logic. When you just know if the EU had been striding ahead, that they wouldn't have viewed it the same way, right? And then even then, there was people saying we should go and help the EU. You know, this is you know, we are their neighbours. Shouldn't we be helping them out? And I thought, you know, that's a noble sentiment. But I did start to wonder, if the boot was on the other foot, how many of those people would think that Britain, right? If Britain was so low in the vaccination rollout and the EU was so high, how many people would think that we had a moral right to go to the EU? They'd be saying, oh, it's too late. This is Brexit. Welcome to the Brexit. Wasn't it take back control? Wasn't it take back control? Why don't you go and catch some magic fish? Why don't you use your magical sovereignty? And then we get to Friday. Okay, we get to Friday afternoon of last week. What was it? The 29th of January, that fateful day when the masks slipped, didn't it? Something just broke, you know, the EU. You know when you're like at work and you're trying to convince yourself that you haven't fucked up, you know, they're just no, I'm sure I have filed that. I have filed that over there. And then after a while, you suddenly start throwing accusations out left, right and centre. And essentially, that was what the EU started doing. I don't know what happened on Friday. Maybe they'd started drinking early. I don't know. Maybe Ursula von der Leyen started early on the Grey Goose, but they have some meeting. And then the upshot of that is that she wants to activate Order 66 or Article 16. I can't remember, but neither of them seemed like positive ways forward. There must have been some people going, yeah, Ursula, doesn't that sort of create a hard border on the island of Ireland? That's a fucking difficult one to say, isn't it? The island of Ireland. The island of Ireland. but yeah, she's not. No. It's get that info. Get it out now. Get out now. It's a Friday. Everyone else is having a little bevy. Get it out now. We'll just slip it under the radar there. You know, I mean, hard border on Ireland. Who's going to really notice? Then, I mean, dude, were they not saying for 4 years that one of their biggest priorities in the whole Brexit negotiations was to not have a hard border on the island of Ireland? So some of her advisors, they must have been going, Ursula, look, this is not, you know, doesn't feel good. Yeah, hey, fuck you lot, all right? I'm not the head of the EU for nothing, yeah? Although no one really knows, you know, exactly how I became the head of the EU. But, you know, hey, if the people don't like it, they can vote me out. And they're like, actually, they can't, Ursula. That's actually one of the biggest problems with the EU for many people is the sort of democratic deficit and the actual difficulty of getting rid of anyone or indeed knowing who the fuck anyone else is. And anyway, this information comes out, you know, that they're going to activate, you know, they're going to go outside of the Brexit deal and activate Article 16. And then there's, you know, even the Remainers are in shock now. James O'Brien fucking tumbleweeds on his Twitter feed. You know, they get accused of vaccine nationalism by the WHO. The Archbishop of Canterbury is weighing in. Justin Welby. Isn't anyone else think Justin is just a really weird name for an Archbishop of Canterbury? It just sounds like some kid that worked at Foot Locker got like a seriously big promotion. And it must be very hard for people in other countries to go like, you know, even Ursula, she's still steaming. She sent someone out for Rizla. And someone's going, Ursula, this is pretty bad. I mean, there's been a lot of condemnation on the world stage. The Archbishop of Canterbury. What the fuck is the Archbishop of Canterbury? Isn't that like a town in Kent? And then we see something that we have almost never seen, which is a public U-turn from the EU. An EU-turn, as the tabloids probably said, but I didn't check. What was interesting, I thought, in the reaction to it was for a lot of people, to them, it was genuinely the first evidence they'd ever seen that the EU could act like selfish, fucking spoilt pricks. You know what I mean? They were like, oh, this is so weird. I'm just finding it hard to calibrate that in this instance, my country weren't the dicks. You're going, I don't know if you followed the Brexit negotiations. I think that there was mutual dickery at times. You know, it could be argued that Britain perhaps took the lion's share of the shithousery, but the EU certainly got their beaks wet from time to time. I mean, this organisation are notoriously bad in a crisis, right? And I think that there's a reason for that. It's because that they're largely separated, aren't they, from the electoral consequences of their actions. I know that we get to vote in EU elections, but the turnout across Europe isn't fantastic. We don't really have a say. You know, a lot of people don't know what the European Commission or who it's comprised of how you get rid of, you know, how you get rid of the senior people. And I think, and this is going to be a very strange analogy, I think it's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever seen that show Don't Tell the Bride, where they get this young couple that clearly wants someone else to pay for their wedding. So they cynically exploit that. And they get this fucking, like, it's always some absolute tool of a bloke, you know what I mean? He's got one of those looks on his face. They give him like $5,000 to organise a wedding. He goes away. And without his wife there, you know, his fiance, his mind goes mad. Like, he's got no consequence to his actions. He's planning some wedding that's in sort of a recreation of like an alien autopsy or like themed around Roswell or some mad shit like that. Because what he can't see is just how furious he's making the person that he's got to marry. And that's the problem with the EU, isn't it? You know, they are just separate. I mean, this is one of the arguments I've had with Remainers for a long time. Even my friends who are genuinely passionate about the European project, after all the arguments we've had of Brexit, I'm like, well tell me somebody who's currently sitting on the European Commission. You know, outside of the big dogs, you know what I mean? Forget Barnier, you know, forget Papa and fucking Nicole, Ursula von der Leyen. Tell me of that, what is it, 15 person strong commission. Just who's the Minister for Agriculture? You know, I mean, I probably wouldn't know that about Britain. At least in Britain, though, we roughly know who a few pricks are. We like, there's that Jenrick bloke. I know Hancock is, Priti Patel, Quasi. You know, it's quite useful to have people on your telly because then you know who you're angry with and who you need to get rid of at the next available opportunity, you know? I mean, this isn't the first time they've acted like this. I mean, you look at the Lisbon Treaty, you know, the Tony Soprano level shit they pulled on countries that weren't fully enamoured with that. You know, the migrant crisis, Greece. You just think, why did you not think that the EU would ever act like this? You know, they say, oh, it's just a trading bloc. That's what we were told for so long. It's just a trading bloc. Well, you know, in Star Wars Phantom Menace, so was the Trade Federation, right? And those fuckers invaded Naboo, yeah? So just... Being a trade federation doesn't mean that you can't act like bricks.
What most people think.
And I don't know, this is not to mention how the hell all this went down with old Joe, I'm a globalist, did I mention I'm Irish Biden? I mean, I can't think that this played out that well. I mean, it's fair to say that the EU has enjoyed a, you know, relative global sympathies in the Brexit process. Britain has been portrayed to be largely the bad guy. But what they've done is they've strong-armed it and they've held their counsel, a bit like Jack Nicholson in that film A Few Good Men. Remember when he's under interrogation from Tom Cruise and Tom's going and going and going at him and he's just not cracking. Then right at the end he goes, "You can't handle the truth, you little pissant." And then everyone's like, "Oh, they actually cracked. We didn't think he was going to crack." Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's like the coolest kid in school, do you know what I mean? All the way through sixth form college, and then just one day they just publicly shat themselves in the canteen. And it's just, I'm not saying that Britain should be held up as paragons of virtue and honesty and that the EU are inherently bad. It's just that going forward, could we just have a little bit of perspective that the EU are a political and economic body that acts sometimes aggressively in their own self-interest, and they're not run by loads of little Dumbledores and Gandalfs trying to defeat the evil fucking wizard Sauron. Just a quick hype this week. Just one thing I want to mention again is that the book is coming out. My book, fucking hell, Jeff, come on. Where did I go right? How the left lost me. I think it should be where did I go wrong? How I lost myself in trying to remember the title. But I've been having to reread it recently for doing proof checks and various things. And I think there's a few stories in there you're going to like, man. I think one of them that particularly stands out is the first time I did Question Time. If you want to know the real behind-the-scenes story of what happened between me and that beef, I don't know if you saw it, but I had a bit of a beef with Diane Abbott that I never saw coming because she was just... So I remember that after the Leave vote, she said, well, people just wanted to see less brown people on the streets. Because obviously, when you go around the continent of Europe, that's what you think mainly. Oh, wow, there's so many brown people in Europe. That's definitely not dominated by Caucasians whatsoever. And she obviously, the Labour Party had decided that, you know, they're switching strategy and that maybe it would be a good idea to not completely alienate people that they would depend upon in future votes. And I basically called her out on it. I did not expect that. And I remember when the credits rolled, me and Diane were still going toe-to-toe. So if you want to know the story about that and what happened in the green room after, it made it sound like we got a bit freaky in the green room. You know, look, never be said the value of a grudge fuck, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if we've discussed this for a while, but it happens every once in a while is that there may be someone that you fundamentally disagree with, but you might have great sex together, you know, because maybe you're in a race to give each other disappointing sex and that great. Where am I going with this? Look, the book is going to be out in early May. If you want a discount, now is the time to buy it, preferably for Amazon. But if you've got your issues with old Jeff Bezos, Waterstones will do just as well. You might have to pay a quid more for the privilege. And yeah, get it ordered. Okay, just a quick chat about a friend of the show, Sadiq Khan here. Because as you know, we're coming up on the London mayoral elections and he gets virtually no scrutiny whatsoever from the comedy community. Who are always talking about, you've got to punch up, Jeff, you've got to punch up. It's just such a great feeling, punching up on power. What about the SNP? They're in power. No, I like Nicola. She's my adorable liberal spirit animal. What about Sadiq? Oh, Sadiq, amazing Sadiq. So look, let me be the one to do it, is that he did a bit of virtue signalling again this week. He tweeted that he stands in solidarity. And, you know, in kind of liberal social media world, standing in solidarity often means tweeting something. Let's be honest, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. Do you know what I mean? People at the Stonewall riots actually getting done over by coppers. Now, standing shoulders to shoulder generally means that your shoulders ain't fucking nowhere near each other. But he said, we stand in against homophobia, transphobia, biphobia and queerphobia. And I'm thinking, right, okay, I understand the first two. Homophobia, transphobia, you know, I think that as much as society has progressed, I think that homophobia still obviously exists, right? And we just got to keep fighting that fight. Transphobia, there's a lot of debate about the principles of self-ID, but there's also a lot of transphobia out there as well. Fair enough. Biphobia, you go, look, maybe I'm living in a sheltered cishet world, as they call it. A cis heterosexual, born male, stayed male world. But I don't know, is biphobia a big thing? Email me in if you're biphobic, you know, let me know your reasons for your irrational hatred against difference. But also, if you are bisexual, email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com, because look, I've heard odd comments over the years, you know, like, oh, greedy, you know, I mean, that probably is an annoying comment. If you're bisexual, you've probably heard that a lot. People go, oh, I just always get those greedy comments, you know, batting for both teams, pick a team. It's just so exhausting. And you go, yeah, that must get annoying over time. Equally, it does wind me up that people on social media often use the word exhausting for having to explain themselves. You go, if you think having to tweet the same point several times is exhausting, I would suspect that you've never done manual work. I think about, you know, bisexuality is still, I suppose, misunderstood to a point, because I guess it's disorienting for the family, you know what I mean? Like, if you've got a young teenage kid and they date a girl, you know, say it's a boy, then they date a girl, then they date a boy, and it goes like, look, we just want to get our head around it. You know, if you're gay, brilliant, we'll all start having very stereotypical fantasies of a gay wedding and how hilarious you're going to be in social gatherings. But you go, people are kind of binary, that's the point, isn't it? You go, so you're bisexual, so hang on, so wait a minute, you like a bit of slap and tickle with both, but which one are you going to settle with? And they're like, no, we could potentially settle with either. And you're like, I don't know if it goes in people's... I don't know if people can compute that, in fairness. And, you know, we're all a little bit attracted to both sex. Look, tell me when you saw Freddie Flintoff steaming in the 2005 Ashes if you didn't, you know, feelings. Yeah, if you don't sometimes still watch those ones on Sky Sports Cricket and, you know, just imagine giving old Fred a little rub down between... Look, I'm just saying that there is a spectrum within all of us. Queer phobia is the other one, right? I do not know what that means, okay? And I'm someone, even though, you know, I admit I'm not as progressive as others, I don't fully know what queer means because, you remember, you know, younger people, you might be completely comfortable with this. It wasn't so long ago I was telling off my mum for using that word. And maybe, I wonder if, you know, using phrases like queer phobia, which one, you know that the vast majority aren't going to understand what the modern definition of queer is anyway. And two, therefore, they're not going to be queer phobic because they don't really know what they're phobic of. And I just wonder if it was like I discussed with Nico last week. By the way, Nico Yearwood, what a debut on What Most People Think. If you haven't caught up with that episode, do get involved because I know that obviously you've had the Badils and Brigstocks and people like that. But Nico, man, he's an interesting guy you need to hear from. And we were talking about the fact that, yeah, you're out of that discussion, right? So it's a little way of letting people know that you're in the gang, isn't it? It's like wearing a fucking badge. If I was to be queer phobic, I'd have to do a bit of Wikipedia first. Hang on, I'm about to do some queer phobia. Just give me a sec while I find out what the fuck it is. Ah, oh, you disgust me. Now I know what it is. I'm disgusted. So much discourse about words that must seem so odd to people that are outside the discussion. Like, you know, when you get, on American TV shows or award shows and people just randomly come on and tell you their pronouns, you know. Hi, my pronouns are he/him. And you think like that is, I never thought when I was kind of fluking two B's. I don't even know if I knew what pronouns were fully when I did A-level English. And then I never thought, like, imagine if you were trying to throw forward, you know, what are going to be the big discussion points in 2021? You'd have gone like fucking spaceships, man. You know what I mean? Like the end of like international borders. No one would have guessed pronouns whatsoever. And I think that historians one day, they'll look back, right, and they'll have social media as a resource to kind of gauge what our lives were like. Do you know what I mean? Did they have good lives? Did they have a lot of leisure time? I think one thing that might make them think that things weren't as bad as we made out is the amount of time we've spent discussing really weird things. You know, like they'll look back and they'll have this, like the fucking the equivalent of the Bayer tapestry for the pandemic. And I go, right, what appeared during the pandemic? I'd imagine it was a lot of fear of death. And you go, yeah, I mean, there was some of that. A lot of chat about pronouns, there was the Black Lives Matter thing. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, the pandemic stuff. But in a way, then they ended up arguing about Brexit again. So, you know, the pandemic stuff was actually the fourth most discussed thing during that period. And yeah, maybe, you know, what most people think is that once in future, maybe what historians will think is that the fact that we had so much time to spend discussing pronouns will mean that maybe life wasn't as bad as we made out after all. Okay, we'll chat a bit of bollocks now, but there is a touch of men's mental health about this. It's about middle age. I speak about this a bit, but as I'm in my mid-40s now, and a lot of stuff has gone wrong for me over the last few years. Not like, you know, properly, as I said last week, poorly. You've got a relative that's really poorly, they're dying. That's how the British cope with the idea of death. Yeah, old Bill, he's a bit poorly. Okay, am I in the will? But yeah, I've had carpal tunnel in both hands. I've had a Morton's neuroma in my foot, which admittedly does sound like something you buy off the JML catalogue. New from Morton's, the Morton's neuroma. It has neuralgic cleansing property. I've had one of those. I've had plantar fasciitis. Try getting some sympathy for something that sounds like you're saying shite. It sounds like you're saying I've got foot shites. I've got. it sounds like an old northern complaint. I got the old foot shites is what I got. And the other thing that I've noticed recently is where because of the lights that I use sometimes when I video things in my house, I've started to see the quite quick decline of the hair at the front of my hairline now. And I know there'll be men that are completely bored that are further along the line now going, well, welcome to my world. But this in a way is the point. These are disturbing developments. I can now see the shape of my head in full. And the first insight, I could see what I'd look like bald. And the news from the front isn't good. There are some blokes that could pull it off. They've got one of those little fucking just bullet-shaped noggins. A bullet shape would be weird, but you know what I mean. But I've got a big, me and my son have got the same. We've got big coconut heads. And it's not going to be good times for me. I'm going to have to do that thing of growing a really big beard and wearing like wanky fucking Shoreditch glasses just to try and pull focus. But whenever you mention these things, right? Failing body, you know, saggy balls, just aching joints. It gets howls of derision because you're a man, doesn't it? Right? And again, and that's from men and women. You know, you say stuff. Yeah, yeah, my hair's thinning out. They go, oh, you'll have to get a syrup soon. You know, I'm having trouble getting up from chairs. Hey, look at him. Fucking hell, I need a Zimmer frame. People don't say that stuff as much to women, especially when it comes to hair, does it? They don't say that about hair with women. If women's hair is thinning out, that is like a... it's like a tragedy in the community, isn't it? It's like people talk about it in hushed tones. See old Sylvie's hair. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with her hair. You know, we kind of expect male pattern baldness. So maybe, look, maybe there's a reason for this is because it's harsher for women. But women don't get called out on it. You know what I mean? They don't get made like unbelievably... So they don't get insulted. You don't get a new fucking nickname, do they? You know, look at the stick I get about my forehead, which is getting bigger. You know, loads of insults. You know, you could land a plane on that fucking Aunt McPartland, but without the money. All that stuff. Would you say that to a female celebrity? You know, that would only be like the worst level troll on that. I get that from family. And I do worry, you know, I do worry like if I have a fall, that the recovery time will be probably worse than long COVID now. That's the worst thing. That's when you know you've hit middle age, is your first thought when when you stack it or hit the deck isn't like, oh, the pain I'm in. It's the pain I'm going to be in. You go, right, okay, so this pain now, this will probably throb for about 20 minutes. Then it will mysteriously and quite worryingly disappear. And then it will over 4 days. 4 days I'll be walking like I just got out of prison. Come on, Jeff, you're better than that. I'm not. As I said on Twitter this week, people say, oh, Jeff, you're better than that. And if I was better than that, I wouldn't have said it. Now, the hair colour thing as well. This is a thing that men don't really have an option for, is to dye your hair. Like, if you're dyeing your hair as a bloke, you better be, like, hosting some sort of primetime quiz show. I mean, who isn't at the moment, by the way? But, you know, you better be like Michael McIntyre. You're allowed to do it if you're, you know, if you're on front and you're supposed to be presenting a shiny floor, a smiley persona. Anyone else? Like, how quickly people notice when men have had their hair colour. Women, every fucking week. Yeah, I've gone for peach this week. I'm having a peach week. Can you imagine as a bloke, if you're like, yeah, I just felt very mauve this week. Like, mauve, like, you're all right, man. You're having some sort of weird fucking second coming of the emo goth phase. And, you know, women under oppression, you know, a lot of ladies might be listening to this thinking, well, it is different in the old humour mockery stakes because women have under more pressure to look good. I am wondering about that pressure since lockdown, since women have electively made their own decisions to put on makeup for stuff that really doesn't need it. Do you know what I mean? Just like checking in with their mate. Oh, I've got a Zoom. Better go and put my face on. You don't have to put your face on. I mean, if there's one, you know, it's a pandemic, you know, you could go faceless. Or even when delivery drivers come in, you know, same guy, time and time again, makeup, perfume, low cut top. Look, there might be something happening there, is what I'm saying. But of course, it's not. You know, that's putting legal disclaimers. I was quoting there a fictional wife from the 1970s. That's always my image. I don't know if it was because of the Confessions of a Salesman type things or Carry On Laughing. I always imagine that women were at home in negligees, waiting to bang any bloke that knocked on the door. Ah, those were the days. But yeah, look, if this is going to change, we're going to make ourselves feel better. We as men need to start raising each other up, guys. We need to start raising each other up. And if a bloke says, oh, fucking look at my hairline. You go, yeah, that must feel really tough, Tony. How does that make you feel? Do you feel emasculated, worried, fearful? And as I said, it does sound like one of the wankiest things I've ever said. So, hey, look, maybe things are as they are for a fucking reason. Okay, I've only really got time for one letter this week, but I think that this is a massive social issue that needs to be addressed. This is from Malcolm, who makes the point, right, that obviously we are expected, when we have dogs, to pick up dog shit. Not everyone does it, you know, and it is always quite a horrific moment where you just feel like you're a servant to something that's smaller and way more stupid than you. But we do it, right? There are those weird people that put them in black bags and then fucking hang them on a nearby bush. It's just such an unbelievably selfish thing to do. It's just like, I don't want to have it in my hand. I'll just I'll just do this weird kind of Blair Witch style shit gallery for any small child that goes past. But anyway, but we know that the social expectation is that we are supposed to pick up our dog's shit. By the way, my dog is fucking, like, it's no coincidence, man. The other day, I took out 4 shit bags. Now, I know some of you say you need to have them on a roll, but well done you for being organised. I'm not gonna do that thing of having one on my belt, do you know what I mean? I might as well just fucking have a fanny pack then as well. But she did 4 shits, right? I did all 4 shits in individual bags, put the last one in the bin. As I was doing it, she'd done another shit. I don't know if anyone else is getting fucking terrorised by their dogs on this basis. But I digress, right? Malcolm's point is about the rise in the number of people that have horses now, because obviously, you know, there's a bigger middle class, it's more accessible. Why is it that a dog owner can be fined for small deposits and a horse rider has no liability whatsoever for their horse shit? Fucking great shout, Malcolm. What is that? We just accepted that our whole lives, right? We just go past a horse. I mean, the horse, just the brazenness of it. Again, this may be a thing of middle age, but there's a certain level of envy, you know, with your movements. They get more complicated as you get older. But watching a horse just mid-stride, just emptying their guts onto the street. That was a horrible phrase. But yeah, there's no fining for it. Who's going to take this point on? You know, as Malcolm says, if we are truly to be a fair society, should we not introduce fines for horse deposits? Well, he's a lot more polite in his language than me. Should we not require, I love the use of rhetoric here, riders to dismount and bag the offending material? And do we need to upscale the waste bins and wheelie bins? You know, that's true. I mean, you'd be emptying them every other day. But yeah, I think that you should have like a giant... How big would the giant horse poopy bag? And then you could just like clip it either side of the saddle. It could sort of like form a counterweight. And then you could maybe, you know, if you were having like a handicapped horse, not a handicapped horse. Horse, that would be a, who'd buy the rights to that? But no, I mean a horse, right? You know what I mean, right? So yeah, I just think if you're listening to this, right, it's the same as smokers that seem to think that dog ends aren't rubbish. My whole life, I've just thought they're absolute fucking brass neck of these people. Finish it, and they just love flicking it, don't they? Because they know deep down it looks cool and rebellious, and it fucking does. But that's not the point. I don't know what they think. It's biodegradable. Do you ever remember that when there was that kid at school that first worked that out when they got caught dropping litter by an adult? It's biodegradable. Looked around. Some people stayed like that, became smokers. And yeah, just putting, it's just, I don't know about you, man, there's just something unbelievably gross about dog ends. And there's something unbelievably gross about horse shit. And I think that who is going to seize the tricky nettle of this? I think that I would say that the Lib Dems, they're running short for attention, haven't they? They haven't really got a place at any of the big debates at the moment. So if you're listening, Davey, I think horse shit is your thing, mate. Okay, that is pretty much the end of this week's show. We just got a few Patreons to welcome before we do the iTunes 5-star reviews. Those Patreons are Ali Mack. I don't know if that's a woman called Alison McIntosh or Ali Mack, one of those couples. Yeah, we're like Brangelina, but the suburban version. Paul Carney, that's a carnivorous Paul Carney. He likes meat, Paul Carney. He has his steak blood rare. When he goes to McDonald's, he has a big tasty. Laura Smart, thank you very much for your support, Laura. Dan Dickinson, as we've said before on the podcast, alliterations are worth their weight in gold. If you are pregnant, right, and you're currently having a kid, just see, is there an alliteration that you could give your child and give them an advantage in life? Paul Yoward. Cole Burden, fucking hell, Cole. When's your next moody album coming out, Cole? The new album from Cole Burden, Mercury Music Prize winner. This album is called Psychodrama. And Hillary Graham, who just sounds like one of those preachers from the States, who it turned out had a 17-year-old gay lover, despite everything, all the hypocrisy that he said about gays. The devil came to me and he had a dick in his hand, and I'm afraid to say that I collapsed in the face of that. That evil that evil professor of penis. Professor of penis. Right, we're going to do some iTunes 5-star reviews. If you leave some iTunes 5, if you leave them on any format, you know, pod shit or kind of audio wank, thank you for that. These are the ones that I know how to access. So a 5-star review from Kagi S, who first came across me on when I did my Radio 4 show, Right Leaning But Well Lit Meaning. I have a problem with my own titles, don't I? MEBL, who says she's an old school lefty but loves the show. Thank you. That's one of Labour's problems, isn't it? Old school lefties, they're not necessarily connected. This is from DJ Kiang. Hey man, absolutely love US election chat. Think you and most people have it spot on with regards to Donald Trump. He's definitely funny, but clearly nasty. Also loved Leo Kurs on the podcast. A proper funny man. What are you saying? A proper funny man. You saying I'm not proper, right? Yeah? Am I being a bit paranoid? Simon Schaefer. As a 96-year-old former member of the Einsatzgruppen, it's been a while since I've heard my views stated with such conviction and aplomb. It gives me a great deal of hope for the future. Now, I haven't checked this, but I'm about, is this a blague here? Is Einsatzgruppen some sort of horrific wing of, like, Nazi doctors, and this is some clever FBPA type? Well, I said it. In the end of the day, I've got the 5 stars. They're in the bank. Not all right. This is from Matty Boycop. All right, it's got to be a Scouser. Not all right of Centre Comics to Jim Davison. I thought it was only me that thought this way. There it were, Liverpool, mate. If you've got any right of centre views, get out. You know, like one of those horror films where the little child whispers, get out. There is a place for centre-right nuanced comedy opinion. It's genuinely helped me through 3 lockdowns. So thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Matty Boy Cop. This is from Linhard, the only podcast I've listened to where I don't find my mind wandering off into other things. Well, thank you very much. That's the idea. This is from Durfil. Yet another good reason to look forward to Fridays. I think this one's going to be up on a fucking Wednesday, mate. Do you know the only reason I'm getting out early? Because I want to do it while all the shit about the EU is still live. I'm that desperate to get some extra digs in. Jeff is the vaccine for the woke virus. Thank you. Well, that's a good quote. I might go on the poster. This one's from Julie Brown, who says, there are very few right-wing comedians around. Basically says that I'm not just blowing up the government, blowing smoke up the government's backside, but giving them a kick when they need it. Well, of course, you know, give them a kick when they need it. But at the moment, you know, the government, I mean, in fairness to them, they have fucking fluked this, haven't they? I mean, like, we only just got back past the 100,000 death mark. And that feels like, oh, you're still bringing that up, are you? It's all about the vaccines, mate. Do you know what I mean? That was always the focus. We're always very much geared towards the vaccines. I know we just sort of made out that it was about mortality, but really it was a little sleight of hand. So we could basically give it a bit of the old, it's coming home, it's coming, AstraZeneca's coming home, subject to EU export blockades, tariff bans, etc.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.